Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Hope you enjoy the show. Hey everybody, welcome to Ancast. I'm Zach Burgey. Justin is here.
Hey guys.
It's Justin Tsimikas.
He's been a while.
Yeah, you were the co-host of the show for a really long time. Your name is still on the little logo graphic that I use sometimes.
Oh, whoops.
Yeah, no, it's fine. It's
well, you know,
the show is 10 years old this year, I feel completely justified in relying on old shit.
The funny thing is, so I do a little mini podcast for my gym.
Yeah.
And I was taping last week and I posted 2 days ago, and I posted the episode, and I go in my car and I listen back to it while I'm driving somewhere, and I say, "Hey everybody, welcome to Ancast." I'm just like, oh crap.
You said that on your show?
On the gym show. And like, there, the overlap between people that listen to that show and listen to this show is like
zero. Two
absolutely
separate circles.
Zero.
Yeah.
So I was able to like run home and like quickly grab me doing a proper welcome from another episode and plop it in and yeah. Re-export. But I was just like, oh God, I've never left in spirit.
Well, it has been a while since we've had you on.
Yes.
So I missed it. Yeah, so we should catch up a little bit. What have you seen lately that you thought was good?
Anime-wise, or...
Well, let's start with... We usually start with, you know, regular movies.
Regular movies.
I hate that phrase, it gets to the point. But in terms of movies, what have you seen
it's only... April now, which means we just finished The Doldrums, where nothing is in theaters of any value at all.
There's been so much to see.
Oh, God, there's nothing.
Captain Marvel.
Well, you know, I don't.
Justin kind of movie.
You know, I don't do superhero movies.
I know.
Although I did make a very major exception for Spider-Verse, and I'm so happy I did because it was so good.
Yeah, if you didn't, I would have been like, dude.
Well, I was one of the one people were telling you.
Well, if you still hadn't seen it by now, anyway.
Yes.
No, it took me forever to go.
I pre-ordered the 4K Blu-ray. I'm still resentful because it made me buy a Jaden Smith song.
Yeah. Right.
But it was so good. But honestly, so. I have actually not gone to see Us yet.
Okay.
That's next on my list, but I haven't been to the theater in a couple months because, you know, being in LA, all the good Oscar movies come out really early here.
Yeah.
Different from the rest of the country. So I had already seen all of the big Oscar movies, and that was basically the only thing good playing for a while.
That's what was in theaters for the last, like, from like January through like mid-March,
right,
like early March, maybe.
Yeah, so yeah. I went to see, that, like, so many of my favorite films from last year actually didn't even come out during Oscar season. Like,
right.
The only Oscar movies I liked was The Favorite,
mm-hmm,
and Roma.
Yeah.
And I love both of those movies, Roma significantly more than The Favorite. But that was more or less it. All of my favorite movies are like stuff that came out in April, like, you know, Leave No Trace or Black Klansman, or, you know, some of those.
Black Klansman was nominated for Best Picture, wasn't it?
Yes. Yeah. But it also, that came out in the earlier part of the year, though.
It was like summer.
Yeah, it was a summer film.
yeah.
And actually, one of my favorites of the last year didn't get Oscar buzz. It was just too small of a little indie movie, Thunder Road.
Yeah, I watched that with you. It was really good.
It was so good. It's such a little movie, but I feel like people are so broken these days that it's just kind of the laugh at, what a mess we are. Let's just start working on rebuilding sort of mood that I think just kind of, it really resonated with me.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, Thunder Road is really the only movie I can outright recommend that everyone isn't sick of talking about.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a shame, but, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing Us, but, you know, I'm late to the boat on that one.
Yeah, I liked it okay.
I'm sure it got way overhyped, as these things do.
It's doubtlessly a piece of art, so it at least has a tremendous amount of artistic merit that is worth discussing.
Okay.
So I'm curious to see what you think of it.
And, you know, I live right by the art house theater in town.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of remiss in my responsibility to go see these inscrutable Indian foreign films that play there. And I got to get back to that.
That play there and then they're out on digital or whatever, or streaming service. Like, yeah, that week or the next week or something.
I like going there. It's like a third of a mile to walk, and it's just, you know, I like that heroin like ritual of just, you know, pulling up and sitting down, and oftentimes if it's the middle of the afternoon, I'm the only one in the theater.
It's either you and like two senior citizens,
right? And you know, if it's the kind of movie that I often go see, the senior citizens are gone within a half hour.
Sure, yeah.
One of my favorite memories of all time is going to see like Ichi the Killer in the theater and sitting in the back row and watching people literally run out of the theater, some of them shielding their eyes from the screen.
Yeah, no, I've had a few experiences like that where the old people have to get up and leave because the movie's a little too shocking for them. You wonder if they do any reading about the film before they go see it, but I guess not.
I mean, to be fair, a lot of my favorite film-going experiences are stuff that I'm like, I have no idea what this is. I'm just going to close my eyes and walk in the theater.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's how I saw Mervyn Keller for the first time. I had no idea what the hell that was.
Most people still don't.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. No, both those movies you mentioned, Leave No Trace and Thunder Road, are both super good. I hadn't seen them until you recommended them, and they're super good. Like, little films that, like, but then again, neither of my favorite movies from last year were nominated for anything either.
Which were?
Sorry to Bother You and The Death of Stalin, not nominated for shit.
Right.
I thought they were easily the best movies of the year.
I liked Death of Stalin. It didn't hit me 100% like it did you.
Yeah.
I can't really place why, because I usually love Armando Iannucci stuff.
Well, you're not like...
I'm also not a huge history buff.
Yeah, I was about to say, like, unless you have done a little of that reading,
mm-hmm,
or were interested in the subject just as a hobby,
right,
it would probably make a lot more, have a bigger impact.
Right.
But I am and did and have done that reading, so I loved it.
Yeah.
And it felt like it was a piece of political satire that, in my opinion, barely registers as satire because it's so close to the truth.
Right.
I just finished, actually, for whatever reason, I'd never watched Veep, which is that same dude.
Right. And I love Veep.
Yeah, and I just finished watching pretty much the whole series, and, like, it doesn't register to me. It's funny, but it doesn't register to me as, like, over-the-top satire, because it's just a funnier and more frank way of stating what the truth about these people is.
Right.
Like,
which is
the people in power is that they're all evil, incompetent, self-interested, greedy fuckwits. Like,
who don't give a shit about any of us.
Who do not care about anyone or anything. So that just seems like the truth to me. Death of Stalin was like significantly darker than Veep ever really gets.
Right.
And Veep gets pretty dark. Like, there's some really dark shit in there.
Oh, yeah.
But The Death of Stalin takes that kind of formula, and that guy's voice when it comes to political quote-unquote satire, and applies it to one of the most significant events of the 20th century. And it was totally perfect to me. It was like, yep, this is it. Like, you want my feelings about, you know, the people who run things, here you go, it's this right here. I totally loved it. But yeah, those two and Spider-Verse, but Spider-Verse won best animated, so
right,
yeah.
Yeah, I didn't really care for Sorry to Bother You. I loved where it was going, and the last act lost me entirely,
where it turns into absurdist science fiction.
Yeah,
I thought that was extra good. I liked it a lot.
Yeah, we've talked about that a bit. I was just like, wait, what?
Yeah. No, I thought that movie was excellent. Thumbs up. A+. Have you been watching any anime?
I have, but not what people would expect me to watch. The thing is, because I've been, I had some I had some guests from out of town that were staying with me for a while, and I also, you know, when that was not happening, I've also been in work holes.
Yeah.
And when that happens, I can only watch stuff that's dubbed on the monitor over the computer while I'm working. Mm-hmm. And one of those projects, a little project called Cyborg 009, was kicking my ass so repeatedly that I was literally having nightmares about it and anxiety attacks. And so I dug up my old DVDs of original Fruits Basket. The sequel's coming up, will probably be out by the time this posts.
Friday, yeah.
Yeah. And, but I really needed that warm hug. It's just nice to have that on the screen while facing down this horrible demon project.
Yeah, really. Well, the show, boy, you've never read the comics, right?
If I did, it was like really early in their publication where they hadn't gotten very far past what was in the anime.
Yeah, it's...
It was a long time ago.
The show's... The new show, I'm very much looking forward to. The original feels like a bad adaptation of those comics, and the creator obviously thought that, too.
Yeah, she hated that show.
She hated it, and with good cause. Fruits Basket is like... I've compared it to... I hate to say Evangelion for girls, but like it gets to that level of emotional complexity and processing.
Right.
And so that Akitaro Daichi version was just kind of a betrayal,
you know,
of what the manga was trying to do.
When it first came out, I was such a huge Daichi fan that...
Really?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I cut my teeth fan-subbing Fruits Basket back in the... Or not Fruits Basket, Kotocha back in the day.
Yeah.
So, and, you know...
I think in hindsight, I realize I'm not a fan.
You know, a lot of his stuff has not aged all that well. And comedy often doesn't.
Yeah.
But that very kind of frantic... you know, manic style of comedy has kind of gone out of, you know.
Definitely.
Yeah,
there's no more sudden cuts to, you know, chibi characters beating on each other or screaming for really long periods of time really fast.
Yeah, that's not what anime comedy or comedy in general is much these days. And I think everyone is just kind of so exhausted by everything that we don't want that.
Yeah.
So
it's just not really what... comedy changes a lot over the years.
It does.
Yeah.
And the tonal shifts in that show didn't bother me when it came out, but they do now. That it you get a lot of kind of emotional whiplash in that show, not because the characters take a different turn than you're expecting or anything, but because it can't keep its mind on the actual meat of the show. It has to keep distracting itself somehow.
You're talking about Kotocha or Fruits Basket?
Fruits Basket.
Well, the new one, Jacob was telling me about this, it doesn't have there are jokes, but there's no cutaways. The jokes are just part of the natural flow of the dialogue, and
right.
They don't like pause for laughter or anything. Like, it's not sitcom-y like the Daichi one is.
Right.
Well, also, which is much closer to the, like, Jacob thinks Jacob is like the Fruits Basket expert.
Uh-huh.
He'll be on the show next week to talk about that a little bit. But I go to him for, you know, what do you think of this? And he said that, like, this seems like the perfect adaptation. The first credit is the mangaka.
Really?
Like, production supervisor.
Yeah, I'm sure that now she has some power.
Iron
she's
Fist.
Just like, I am not letting this out
it's
of my 50, sight.
It's 52 episodes, too. It's the whole story.
Wow.
Yeah.
I wonder if it'll go into the sequel manga.
Probably not.
No. Well, at any rate.
People didn't like that, I don't think.
Well, yeah, that usually doesn't go well.
But, yeah.
I will say, though, as a professional video nerd, that old show looks like ass.
Oh, yeah, no, it's DigiPaint Nightmare.
I mean, it was early DigiPaint, so they really didn't know what they were doing yet.
250p.
Yeah, really low res.
152p by 75.
You know, dot crawl everywhere. Like, it looks rough. I have not seen Funimation's Blu-ray. I have no idea what they could have possibly done to it. I have not the original versions that they did, because those looked terrible.
Yeah, the ones where they were cramming 9 episodes onto a disc or whatever.
Yeah, and like trying to do the alternate angle English credit roll, and it looked stop that.
Stop.
But you know, it still looks pretty hanky, especially because, you know, my TV up there is now 4K.
Yeah,
and watching
it's cruel to those discs.
Oh man, it's ugly.
I put in an Animego
Urusei Yatsura disc the other day into my 4K player on my 4K TV.
Oh.
It looked like a fucking VHS. It may as well have been. It looked like a straight Digibeta rip. Just didn't do anything to it. Like, here's the raw feed.
Very few DVDs still look good on a 4K display.
That's true.
Very few.
That's true.
I'm actually kind of shocked and appalled more often than not when I put in a DVD and I'm just like, ooh.
Dot MPEG.
Yeah, look, technology marches on, and I think we are finally at the point of diminishing returns video quality wise.
Mm.
But just now, and everything from, you know, DVDs came out in what, 97?
Yeah.
So, you know, obviously there's a little bit of a gap between what's acceptable now and what was awesome back then. So
yeah, I'm not like, I have to admit, like, I don't know if you watched that Google video game announcement. Their Google Stadia thing where it's all streaming.
I heard about it. I didn't watch it.
Well, they're like, oh, we're ready for 8K. They made a big push, like, 8K. It's going to do 8K.
That's fine. No one else is.
Who's going to fucking use that?
Yeah.
You can't get people to adopt 4K.
No.
It took people forever to adopt 1080p.
And even now, like, look, I'm in the business of making Blu-rays. I spent quite a bit of money upgrading my rig to be able to handle 4K UHD stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm still not done, to be honest.
Right.
It's so hard to tell the difference for most content.
For a lot of it.
The super high budget stuff, yeah, okay, there's a difference, especially if you're really close to the screen.
Yeah, if you're close to the screen, it makes a big difference.
Right. But for the...
Not a big difference. Noticeable. Not a big difference,
right.
But it is noticeable.
Right.
But it's just a slightly higher resolution, mostly.
It really is, and, you know, we are at the limit of human view, human eyesight.
Well,
ability.
And these movies were all shot on 35mm and shit.
Yeah, the effective. Well, yeah, anything shot on 35. The effective resolution of 35 is slightly below 1080p.
Right.
It is.
It's like 900 or something like that.
Yeah, like you might make out grain in more detail in a 4K transfer, but that's, and you know, maybe
sometimes
the colors.
That does make the movie look a lot better.
Sometimes. Other times it
doesn't matter at all.
And other times worse. Like, you know, especially if they, you know, fuck around with the color too much, like the 4K of Mad Max.
You
Fury
can apparently
Road.
Rent the 4K Mad Max from... You told me about this, where they fucked up the color timing really bad, and it screwed with a lot of the special effects.
Yeah, and the flames look like a freaking decal.
You can apparently rent that disc from a Redbox.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking about, like, putting in the 250 or whatever and being like, oh, how bad does it really look, you know? The 4K discs that I've bought largely are fine, but most of them I was like, I didn't need to upgrade this.
Yeah.
Unless it's a new transfer of the film.
And honestly, there's not... You know, as someone who doesn't like big mainstream explodey movies, or even a lot of the mainstream quote unquote classics, I literally there were very little
that you would watch as
seven discs. I went through the entire 4K Blu-ray catalog, seven discs, and one of them was an import. it was Ghost in the Shell, and you know, honestly, that did not need to be on a 4K disc. That would have been just fine had they put that new transfer on a regular Blu-ray.
It came with a Blu-ray, right?
No.
Oh, this was an import from Japan?
Yeah.
So, of course, you didn't get the... It wasn't a combo pack.
I mean, it was a combo pack, but it came with Ghost in the Shell 2.
Oh, in both of them? In 4K?
Uh-huh.
Huh.
And Innocence really doesn't make any sense to put on 4K, but...
Yeah, the maximum resolution of that has got to be 1080p, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that they rendered it, and yeah, absolutely, but...
At the time, that would have been the maximum available to them.
The color is probably slightly better. I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, well, you spent that money.
Yeah, right.
What am I going to do with this now?
I don't know. I'm okay buying, like, for whatever reason, animation looks okay. It looks a little bit better to me.
Well, anything digital, there's really no point.
Nah.
Anything digipaint.
Yeah, Digipaint feels like Blu-ray is unnecessary for a lot of this stuff.
DVD is not good enough, but Blu-ray is
fine
beyond.
Yeah,
it's the quality it's animated at.
That's the version you would get now anyway.
Right.
But I don't know. Like, there's a few cases where I'm like, I'm glad I bought the disc. I'm glad I have the player. But I'm not getting excited about new releases or anything. And like, if I see a movie even that I really love sitting there, like in 4K, it just came out or whatever, I'm like, I don't know about this, you know? Like, yeah. It's just probably not worth the upgrade. Like,
I mean, it's so borderline. I like having the ability to do it more than I like the experience of having it.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And that's just the nerd in me, and I'm sure a lot of people relate. I don't know. For me, I just want to have something in the best possible quality. But
yeah.
A lot of times these restorations they're doing aren't even improvements. They're overcleaned. They're like I'm sure once they bring out like some of the Xerox era Disney stuff.
It depends on whether or not they even do the Xerox era Disney stuff. So they just put the Little Mermaid out, which I haven't bought yet because I'm waiting for a sale.
Okay.
Because I don't really want to pay another. I have bought that movie 50 billion times. So buying it on 4K is like, all right, one more time, I guess. And I'm a little, that one is pretty, it's still a little rough around the edges in some cases. Mm-hmm. And I'm very curious to see kind of what it looks like in 4K. I bought The Lion King and I was complaining about that on one of these episodes a couple of months ago. I was like, I can't believe I put this out. And then, of course, I bought it and was like, okay, all right. Like, I do.
It's
see
just a
difference.
Really good restoration.
It's just a very good restoration of this film. Yeah. I'm assuming Little Mermaid's the same way,
right? But like Cinderella,
I can't wait for that. Well, Cinderella has a lot of really nice design work in it. So if I can get that art in 4K, I'll probably get it in 4K.
I'm just scared of the ludicrous overcleaning job like they did with the Blu-ray of that.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So hopefully they're going to go back. Hopefully these are new transfers. I'm very curious about that Little Mermaid disc.
Yeah.
Now I'm thinking like maybe I will just pick it up. I don't know, man. That's kind of the, like, but the live action stuff I bought, I've been largely kind of, did I really need this?
Yeah, for the most part. I mean, I bought Annihilation. I don't know that was made in 4K.
Annihilation?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was.
Was it?
It streamed on Netflix in 4K.
Well, that doesn't mean anything.
I cannot imagine that a modern film like that would not be.
Easily half of films being released in theaters today are not finished in 4K. Might be shot in 4K, but they're not finishing in 4K. They're finishing in 2K.
Huh. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I mean, I'm still a guess that Coco was not finished in 4K.
Yeah, that one was you told me you were like, I bought the 4K Coco, and it's an upscale.
I couldn't believe it. I was like, I only have a 49-inch UHD display up there, because it's mostly, my office is not that big.
Yeah, but it's huge. Like, you have it, like, right next to your chair, so it looms large in the room.
Right, I was literally just, like, with my face, a couple inches from the screen, I'm like, are those scaling artifacts?
Yeah.
What?
You're like, wait a second.
As far as what else I'm watching, though, I started watching JoJo's.
Really?
Yeah.
First season?
First season, because it's on...
it's on Netflix now.
It's on Netflix and Hulu, and if I'm watching stuff while I'm working, it needs to be dubbed.
Mm-hmm.
And, at least that one I know. It's so over the top that it's almost impossible to dub that not... well,
sure.
If you have a competent crew.
Yeah.
I do really like the dub. The first few episodes are fairly frustrating to watch just because you hate Dio so much.
Mm, yeah.
So I know it will get better, so I'm just kind of waiting it out.
I like season two a lot more than season one. I like season three more than season two. Season four, season five is the best one in my opinion. It's a lot to get through. Most season three was the one that kind of caught a lot of people.
Okay.
So, but season two is really good. So.
I'm having it on in the background, so I should be able to get through it.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Honestly, I'm plowing through so many Blu-rays.
Yeah.
That, I'm actually in production on that,
Well, let's talk about that stuff.
Okay.
You basically handle all production for Discotheque. Not all of it, but some, like a lot of it.
The vast majority of it, yes.
Yeah, for like physical disc production. So you're making menus. We've been over this before.
Yeah.
But it's been a long time since we've had you on. So
it has.
Basically, you live in a reactor that makes discs.
I am the factory foreman and every one of the slaves.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's his little clones.
That's actually not true. I have a few people helping me out now that I am like super, super, super grateful for because they are keeping me alive.
Yeah, right. But you've had, so Discotheque has like put a ton of shit out in the last probably year. So I would say production seems to have ramped up quite a bit.
Well, once we realized that no one was buying DVDs anymore.
Yeah.
That meant that everything had to go on DVD.
Mm-hmm.
And that meant if the masters Blu-ray. Were in stand or Blu-ray, yeah, sorry. No one was buying DVDs, so everything had to go Blu-ray. And that meant that if it was a long series, it had to go SD Blu-ray, mm-hmm. which meant 8 times as many episodes per disc.
Mm-hmm.
And it also meant if, you know, it could go on regular Blu-ray, I had to work on the upscaling. I had to work on everything that would have been easy just got a million times harder, basically.
Right.
So I've been churning out 6 discs a month on the regular.
Yeah.
For about 8 or 9 months now. I think I have a rhythm pretty much set, although I also have these giant projects, which mostly Brady is helping out with.
Mm-hmm.
But some of those, like we announced Bo-Bo-Bo-Bo-Bo-Bo-Bo last year, and that's just taking forever because there's just so much to work on.
How many episodes is that?
70-something.
Right.
76. But, you know, the subtitles are, you know, that would murder most people.
Yeah.
I mean, that show is just nonstop screaming, overlapping dialogue with signs.
Right.
And not only that, because they had to adapt the English version so much, the signs are different on the dub.
Right.
So having people having to go through all that with a fine-tooth comb, it's just, yeah, it just goes really, really slow. So, you know, I thank God Brady's there for me to offload some of that stuff on, but I've had plenty of my own Albatross projects to work on. Cyborg.
Yeah, right. So why don't we talk about that one first?
Mm-hmm.
We've got kind of a little list here of some of the stuff y'all have put out recently that have, you know, had some production stories behind them. And Cyborg seems to be one that I'm pretty sure actually the last time you were on the show, like maybe a year or more ago, you talked about Cyborg. I'm pretty sure you talked about it then, too.
I'm dying.
And you talked about the tapes in your closet and all of that shit.
Well.
So you're finally done with it.
I'm done. Right. With an asterisk.
Right.
Selby, the owner of Discotech, still has to go over the disc. I've sent it to him, the final files, and he still has to make his one last big final check. And that disc is so complicated, I'm sure I missed something. So I might have to go back and make one tweak and resend the replication files to him. But I'm pretty sure I'm done.
Mm-hmm. So what did this entail exactly?
Okay. So,
because I saw the boxes.
A year ago.
They took up like half your living room.
A year ago November, I came home from the gym. And apparently, you know, Sony Pictures Television had the rights before, and they're the ones that put it on Toonami and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And they had dubbed it in half dozen different languages. They had, you know, closed captioned it the way Sony knew how to work at that time, which was, you know, early 2000s. And so Selby just said, hey, Sony Pictures, can you just send Justin everything that you have for Cyborg? Here's his address. And they're like, sure. Come home, and I can't even see my front door. Like, boxes and boxes. It was over 1,000 tapes. And, of course, none of them are in any kind of order. They're just all in just completely random.
Over 1,000 tapes for 50 episodes.
51 episodes, yes. Yeah. I had versions in PAL, versions in NTSC, versions in that are cropped to 4x3, versions that were widescreen, versions that were edited for television, versions that weren't, all possible combinations of that.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to that, I had copies made on Beta SP tapes for small markets that didn't have digital Beta cam decks, because those were really expensive back then.
Mm-hmm.
I had versions that had the time code burned into the screen and were on those giant old 3/4-inch U-matic tapes that that was basically used to scrub through and find time code, because we weren't at a point where people could scrub through video files on a computer yet, and that was how they spotted subtitles.
Oh, my God.
I had these tapes that were called DA88 tapes, which were the old high 8mm camcorder tapes that were recorded in a way that instead of having video, they were 8 tracks of digital audio, because digital Betacam could only hold stereo. And so this was the only way to save a 5.1 track.
Hmm.
Also had a bunch of burned CD-ROMs of the mix files that were mostly unreadable because they had used paper labels.
Oh my god. Holy cow.
Yeah.
So it's like a gigantic puzzle.
Pile of garbage that I literally, because I didn't have room in here, I had to just take them all to my extra my extra space in the basement and pour them all out and just like sort through, because the label on these things are tiny, and it's not like they actually said NTSC or PAL on them. They said 525 or 625. 625 being PAL, 525 being NTSC.
Right.
And like this tiny, tiny text in this paragraph. So I literally had to go through and like look for that one digit difference.
Holy shit.
It took me 2 days to figure out what we had. But thank God there were also some, not all of the Japanese master tapes in there that I was able to use for the most part. And most of the Digibeta tapes were actually in pretty good shape. The English masters, however, did not have the Japanese credit roll, which is different every episode. And it did not have...
Holy shit.
It didn't have the Japanese opening theme, which I have a feeling some people might not like that much, but you know, you gotta have that.
Yeah.
And, or the Japanese title screens.
Okay.
So the first, after figuring out where everything was, I was able to put the PAL tapes and the cropped 4x3 tapes aside and captured, thank God I have a Digibeta deck. Captured all of the master tapes, the Japanese master tapes, and the English ones that I was missing the Japanese masters for.
Mm-hmm.
Then I was able to lay them all out in Adobe Premiere, and the tapes that I was missing, I was able to put back together again by ripping the Japanese DVDs and then plopping the footage from the English masters on top of those.
Yeah.
So once I had all that done...
Just an afternoon's work.
Okay. So once that was all done, I looked at the video, and I'm just like, this looks really bad. Because I was looking at some of the key art, and I realized, because the show was animated in 2001, same era as Fruits Basket.
Mm-hmm. It was a good year for animation.
No. And there are some scenes where it's just like, first of all, they didn't use anti-aliasing when they were drawing the line art.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it looks jaggy, like an old, like a NES Super Nintendo game. Second of all, it was blurry because the first half of the show they mastered to the last highest quality analog videotape format, Beta SP, which means that it looked fairly sharp, but there was all this video noise, kind of like this layer of video noise on it, and also occasionally like you'd see a line across the screen, like a VHS type dropout,
right? Little tracking, something like that.
Yeah, just little stuff like that every once in a while. And I'm like, I can't really do much about that, but I can get rid of the video noise. So I threw a video noise filter over it just to get rid of that. Then I get to episode 27 or so.
Mm-hmm.
And from that point, they had switched equipment. I don't know exactly why this was done, but they had switched cheaper equipment. So they were going out through what appeared to be a shitty consumer composite video output card feeding into a D2 deck. D2 was digital technically, but it came in through composite analog. So even though there were none of those little like VHS style dropouts, the whole thing just got blurry and smeary, and there was dot crawl and there was rainbowing. It just looked like someone had pulled it through a keyhole.
Right.
And like the colors were like smearing outside of their lines. Mm-hmm. And you know, I did what I could. It's just I did what I could.
It looked acceptable to me. Like, from what I expect from a DigiPaint show on Blu-ray, because you showed me a little bit of the footage.
Yeah.
And, like, Wolf's Rain looks like that on Blu-ray. Like,
Wolf's Rain looks a little better than
this.
It looks better than this, but it has
that expected blurriness.
Sure.
I expect it to look like
that. And I feel like when they were producing the show, they expected the blurriness to take away from the jagginess. I feel like they were expecting the blurriness to really kind of mask how jaggy and nasty everything looked.
Yeah.
So anyway, after all the video was squared away, I was able to concentrate on the audio, and the audio was a mess. So I don't have a DA88 deck, and they're not very common. You know, a lot of my friends that run dub studios, like, you know, NYAV and Bang Zoom, they have old DA88 decks laying around, but they don't have them connected. And because of how that technology all worked back then, it's not easy to connect it. Like, you need a Pro Tools, physical Pro Tools rig to use them.
Oh, geez.
So I'm just like, well, I can't do that. Mm. So I took it to this company in Burbank that was able to capture them all. And I had this giant box of them, of like all the 5.1 mixes for the Japanese and all the 5.1 mixes for the English. And I was missing a handful of the English ones, but I got most of them. Mm-hmm. And so they called me back when they were done, and they're like, look, DA88 tapes and 8mm tapes have not held up well, mm-hmm. and these are no exception. And some of these we can't read at all. Some of these are just riddled with dropouts, especially early on the tapes. I'm like, okay, give me what you got.
Mm-hmm.
They hand me back the USB drive I gave them, and I'm looking at the WAV files that they sent me back, and I'm just like, oh my God, I can't use a lot of these. Like, so some of them, you know, the tone at the beginning, it sounds like Morse code. It's just, it's a mess. It's mm-hmm. just, there's nothing left. And so I'm like, okay, what do I do with this? The first half of the show, it wasn't a problem, because even though the American DVDs were only released to episode 8, mm-hmm. the Australian DVDs went to episode 25, and we had copies of those.
Right.
So we were able to take the English 5.1, we were taking the Japanese 5.1 off the Japanese DVDs.
Mm-hmm.
And the English 5.1 off those Australian DVDs. Mm-hmm. Some episodes were randomly missing the scenes.
Really?
Yes.
Holy shit.
Like the,
on those DVDs, there were randomly missing scenes?
A lot of times, like, the episode would start at the title screen when there was, like, whole scenes that took place before the title screen.
Oh, my God. This thing is just laying... It's like coming across a car that has not been assembled. Like...
Yeah.
All the pieces. It's like, here's your car. It's like, do you have a wrench?
So, and I go through every episode, and I find the ones that are not put together. And for the first half of the show, I'm able to take the DVD rips and just plop them in and replace the bad parts.
Right.
Not ideal, because the DVD audio is already compressed. And but, you know, what else? Nothing else. Yeah. These don't exist in any other form. Mm-hmm. So then I get to the part where that was never released on English DVD.
Right.
And I'm just like, oh, God.
Yeah.
What do I do? And thank God there were only about 5 episodes that were not usable, and most of them were fine.
Mm-hmm.
So I was able to take those 5 episodes, and I sent them to NYAV Post. I'm like, look, you guys have a 5.1 mix stage, and I know you have the plugins to make stereo into 5.1, mm-hmm. into kind of a fake 5.1. Can you do this for me? And they're like, sure. So they turned it around pretty quick, and the end result actually is better than the original mix.
Wow.
In a lot of places, because one thing that I learned during the long and miserable QC process is that they were cutting every corner when they were dubbing this show.
Really?
There are lines where the audio's clipping that made it into the show.
Hmm.
There are lines where someone's cut off too abruptly. There's even a line late in the show, and this is like, we're talking past the point where they'd basically given up on Adult Swim, even, where a random line of dialogue comes from the back speakers.
Wow.
And I'm just like, did no one even check this?
Probably not.
Well, and the thing that kills me is that Sony paid through the nose for this. They spent so much money on this show.
Mm-hmm.
Just the tapes that were sent to me new back then would have been around $100,000 worth of tape stock.
Do you think the odds are that 2001 version of Cyborg 009 made $100,000 for anyone?
I mean, who the hell knows? But regardless, they, you know, it's together. It's in the best shape I could possibly make it.
Yeah.
These discs are not my finest hour video quality wise.
But in a way, like, you sparkled, you spit shined it in as much as anyone could.
Zach, you can only put raw sewage through the Brita pitcher so many times.
Yeah, right.
It looked like you can't, I mean, look,
if you're, if for whatever reason you're a big fan of the 2001 Cyborg 009 because you saw it on Adult Swim for the, well, did they show the whole thing in Adult Swim?
They showed all but the last three episodes. And those last three episodes, it appears that it's a story arc that they, the show got canceled and they were just kind of, you know, flushing out the cash.
Yeah.
So there, I don't think that, it doesn't really tell a whole complete story, but it's the, they've never, those three last three episodes have never been aired. Well, they've never been seen in English ever.
Well, now you can.
Yep.
Thanks to you.
So, we don't have a date on this just yet. Before that can happen, Selby has to get the artwork approved for the package and do a final check of the disc, but
pull quote, "What an exhausting nightmare, Justin Savakis.
Please make my pain end."
Animaniacs Network.
But look, I mean, I get the charm of the show. It is a charming show, and I get the nostalgia value. I'm just happy it's over. Those tapes aired landed on my doorstep November 2017.
Yeah,
this is the worst nightmare project I have ever worked on, and that's saying a lot.
Yeah, it is, considering
I have done some garbage. I did the two disc special edition of MD Geist.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm happy it's over.
That's cool. No, it's a fascinating tale, because it's amazing that you can take something that is just obviously just a wreckage. Mm-hmm. It's like you stumbled across just a wreckage, and it's like, turn this back into what it was originally. And it's like, the thing was, you know, rigged together to begin with.
It was wreckage originally. This was meant for the, you know, back in 2001, almost nobody even had an HDTV.
Yeah. You've got a lot of other shit. So another big project, or at least one that you were a little worried about, given the process you were putting it through, was those Galaxy Express movies.
Yeah. Okay. So
you like added film grain to these, right?
Right. And a lot of people were really skeptical about this, and I don't blame them for being.
Well, it's the internet, but yeah.
Touche. Okay. So Galaxy Express movies, these gorgeous classics that, you know, I think every anime fan should at least see once. Mm-hmm. They were shot on film in an era where film grain was the size of your fist, the late 70s. And when Toei Animation did their HD remastering of it about, you know, 6 or 7 years ago, they did the best they could, but that film grain was so big that it ended up just looking really smudgy. Mm-hmm. And it just kind of, you know, people complained at the time because they made the colors kind of too vibrant, and it didn't look, it looked overcleaned. You know, it didn't look like film anymore.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was the masters we had to work with. And frankly, there's a lot of detail in there, and they're not really missing a whole lot of detail. They just look smudgy and too clean. Mm-hmm. So after running some tests, I put them through a filter where it added a bunch of artificial film grain. Now, I did this in After Effects, Adobe After Effects, and the built-in grain plugin was something that Adobe had bought and integrated into After Effects like 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. That plugin, still 16-bit.
Really?
And it's so slow. It actually emulates specific film stocks.
Hmm.
So it's probably the best in class in terms of faking a film look.
Yeah.
Each one of those movies took a solid week of CPU time.
Holy shit.
To filter. And some of them I had to do multiple times because I was still like trying to figure out the right amount of grain to add. Mm-hmm. It's really funny because if you didn't know it was there, I'm really proud of how it turned out, honestly.
I think it looks great.
Because it...
So does everyone else, apparently.
It's just... Yeah, I was very vindicated because I was looking at, like, the Blu-ray.com forums, and they were like... There's some real hard-to-please people on there.
Yep, yeah.
And a couple people were like, hey, look, I eat my words. This actually looks pretty good. Mm-hmm. You know, we weren't going to get a new transfer, and you can do only so much of these things. Having that artificial film grain, not only does it hide the smudginess, but it makes your mind go, oh, right, this is film. And it's just that little bit of grain that it's sort of like how The Hobbit, you know, they tried to do 48p,
yeah, you know, 48 sure
frames a second.
Yeah.
And it just looked way too clean and way too so realistic that it fake. Completely took the fantasy out of it, and everything looks really fake.
You're just on set.
Yeah, it's sort of the same effect here, where that little added film grain makes your brain go, ah, movie.
Yeah.
You know? And I'm actually really proud of how they turned out. It adjusted the colors a little bit, too, to be not quite so oversaturated and perfect-looking, and I think it looks probably, it strikes a good balance. I'm pretty proud of how they turned out.
Cool. Yeah, no, it's a good looking disc. It's interesting. It's just these little stories behind, you know, restoring all this old stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Y'all handling, speaking of DigiPaint, y'all handling 12 Kingdoms.
Yeah, one of the first HD TV shows. It's still 4:3, but it's HD.
Wasn't that a Media Blasters license?
It was.
And it was like people complained about it a lot. I remember there being complaints. Well, it took them forever to put it out.
Well, the DVDs had the issue where a bunch of episodes were in mono.
Oh, that's what it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. Plus, it's long, and like they were putting it out. I think that was still coming out in singles.
Yeah, it was.
It was a long time ago.
Yeah, it was. It was a long, long time ago, and we don't do that shit anymore. But they did eventually come out with the Blu-ray of it, and the Blu-ray was just a rip of the Japanese discs because they didn't know how to encode Blu-rays by themselves at that point,
mm-hmm.
As evidenced by their release of Morabito.
Mm-hmm.
It came out around the same time. But anyway, 12 Kingdoms... Because of that, it was on way too many discs, and they had to charge way too much money for it. It was like 10 discs for 50 episodes or 49 episodes.
Yeah, something like that.
So I was able to make it 5 discs.
Right.
And lose pretty much nothing. Yeah, there's not a whole lot to say there other than, you know, we have pretty much everything from the Media Blasters releases. And
you like that show. You're a fan of it.
I really do. It's I think it might be Sho Aikawa's best adaptation.
I haven't seen it in a really... I never saw the whole thing. I should probably go back and watch it.
Yeah, I mean, at the end, he, you know, he clearly burned out, and the show kind of came to a stuttering halt.
Well, it's based on a really long series of novels.
Exactly. And they covered, like, 5 novels.
Yeah.
And, you know, they did a good job with those, and I really like how they adapted them. And I think the musical score is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Kunihiko Ryo at his best. So yeah, that I'm happy that they're in print again because those Media Blasters discs were getting really hard to find.
Mm, yeah, they were. I mean, you'd find like random volumes of it and use DVD bins. Like if you went to a book off, they'll have like 5 volumes of that.
Then sure,
it'll be like volume 2, 6, 7, 8, 10.
Right, and of course they'd be DVD. Old DVDs of a DigiPaint show, and you watch them on your gorgeous new 4K TV, and be like, oh,
this looks like total ass. Uh-huh. Yeah. I'm still waiting on my fucking copy of Kimigari Orange Road to show up.
Yeah, you and a lot of people.
So what happened there?
Okay, so Discotech is their distributor is moving warehouses,
mm-hmm.
and you can imagine because they don't just distribute for Discotech, they distribute for a whole mess of other companies, and you can imagine what a ridiculous effort moving is for them.
Sure.
So. They basically had to flush out, you know, as much inventory as possible and, you know, to minimize what needed to be barcoded and moved and managed. And it's about a 2 or 3 month long process. But in that time, Discotech's been completely unable to restock things.
Right.
And, you know, fulfill things beyond their first initial order. So if a store didn't order enough copies...
Yeah,
there's not much that can be done. But the good news is that it should only last another month of this nonsense. So late April, early May, things should be getting back to normal. And a lot of stuff, like we've been seeing comments on forums just like, hey, is this show out of print all of a sudden? It was only released for a couple months. And they're like, no, it's still in print. It's still in print. We're just
give wait a little longer.
Couple months. Think of it like, you know, artificial... scarcity like Nintendo does, except totally by accident.
That sucks. I really wanted my copy of Kimigari Orange.
It's coming. It's coming.
I don't want fake scarcity. I was dismayed because I got a notice from Amazon that my shipment was delayed, and I was like, man, I was really looking forward to it.
Amazon delisted it.
Yeah, right. They did.
Yeah.
I pre-ordered it from them. What a wise choice that was. I should have pre-ordered it from Right Stuff, probably.
Well, Right Stuff's been having...
I might have actually gotten it, though, like, beforehand. Maybe, yeah. But I only pre-ordered it, like, a week and a half ahead of
time. That's your problem. You're really far back in line.
Yeah. I sure am. I was excited about that, too. Y'all putting out the Genion classic Kyokara Mao, which is like a million episodes.
Yep.
Is that SD?
No. That was native HD.
So you're putting it on a Blu-ray, like, yep, in HD.
Full.
How many discs is that? It's like 80 episodes, isn't it?
Well, it's 3 seasons and an OVA series.
And you're putting it out in one.
We had the first box set is already out. Second box set is on its way.
Oh, so you're doing it in seasons.
Yes. Okay. And it's 3 discs per 39 episodes each.
Because, like, Genion released that and re-released that and re-released that and re-released that. Like, they kept releasing it. They put it out in singles first and then individual box sets. And then they tried a couple other different things. And then eventually they put it out in this really big, unwieldy cardboard book thing,
mm-hmm,
where it was plastic pages that held, I think it was, it might have been 3 DVDs per side, something like that, of the plastic page.
Oh, wait, the big chunky pages?
Yeah,
I actually have those upstairs because I was using them to get the DVD, to get the subtitles off,
yeah,
of originally.
Yeah, Genion printed a ton of those for whatever reason,
mm-hmm,
and then gave them out as Christmas gifts at one point, I think.
Merry, like, Christmas! Yeah, here's shit we couldn't get rid,
like,
of.
There's 5 of those things at this FYE I used to go to all the time. Like, it was ubiquitous. I don't know why they printed so much of them. At least it felt like they printed a ton of them because they were everywhere.
Well, I mean, that was when the bubble was bursting.
Yeah, it's also, like, long gone. That was, like, right when that bubble was starting to burst.
Right. It's a good show, and I was watching it back on fan subs before they brought it out.
It was too generic for me.
It's pretty generic, yeah, but it has its moments. And if you're, let's face it, you're not the, like, Fujoshi demographic. It's aimed at Fujoshi.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not completely outside the Fujoshi demographic. It just didn't grab me.
I'm outside of the Fujoshi demographic. Regardless, I'm happy it's back, and we have some really handsome box sets of it. So, season 1 is out. Season 2 is coming soon.
Rad. Yeah, I'm glad that's going to be available again. So you also worked on, you also put together that Perfect Blue disc.
Yeah, that was a
not
sort
a
of,
discotheque thing.
But. Right, that was G-Kids by accident.
Yeah.
That disc was originally made for Anime Limited in the UK, and they had me just, you know, change the region code and change the logos, and then we did some additional tweaks for the US market, and then we went back and switched it back for the UK. So it's the same disc, essentially.
Yeah.
I didn't do the restoration on that, and there's... It's the same HD transfer that, you know, was previously released in the UK and Japan.
Okay.
Which, you know, it's not the cleanest of transfers. It's not from the proper film elements.
Mm.
But they were able to put it through some digital filters and reduce some of the grain that was actually in the way of fine detail. So there is more detail, more visible detail. The colors are a little better.
Mm-hmm.
Is it as good as a proper new transfer of an original camera negative? No, but it looks pretty good. That it's what we got.
Well, that's all you can work with.
And honestly, I think people are just happy Perfect Blue's back.
Yeah, well, it's nice to just be able to purchase it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that was out of print for a really long time.
All of his stuff is hard to get now.
Yeah.
With the exception of a few things that were, like, obviously way overprinted, like Paprika, you can still get for, like, $6 or something like that. But I think even the DVD for Tokyo Godfathers, like, is kind of hard to get your hands on.
Yeah.
I mean, you can fucking forget about Millennium Actress, like...
I've heard some rumblings, but nothing concrete.
Man, I hope
so.
I cannot imagine that G Kids is not interested in snapping up that whole library.
I'm sure they would be. Well, I mean, I don't know anything.
But that's
you
Sony,
don't.
and they now own Funimation.
Yes,
it's still Sony, right?
It is, but I'm not sure that one hand is completely talking to the other yet.
Not yet. Yeah, it's amazing how slow that process has been.
Yeah, it seems like they put it off for a good year before actually working to
before doing anything with it. Yeah, change is coming though.
Yeah,
I think
it's in the wind.
All right. Well, you know, we got a ton of questions on Twitter.
Okay.
All right. Boy, this reminds me of old times. I haven't taken questions on this show in a little while, so this is fun.
Nostalgia.
Chiodori wants to know, have either of us imported any anime series or movies recently?
Anime series, no. I have imported... I just imported a Blu-ray of this really quirky Japanese horror movie called One Cut of the Dead.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah, do you know about this?
Yeah, they there was a big kerfuffle with it because somebody uploaded the complete movie online or something, and it, like the piracy really hurt its chances of getting distribution. It was a whole story last
year. Yeah.
Was it good?
Japanese, I love it. It's quirky as hell. It's it's so firmly tongue-in-cheek that you can't help but just laugh at how goofy it is.
Yeah.
I actually watched it on the plane back from Japan last year, and it's like the top... I think it was the top grossing movie in Japan last year.
Wow.
And made for like 30 grand.
Mm-hmm.
If you're unfamiliar, it's a very, very tongue-in-cheek zombie movie with one interrupted cut. Like, no cuts, no, like, one take.
Did they cheat, or is it...
I mean,
like cheat like Birdman cheats, where like it goes into a stairwell and it's all black for a few seconds.
Not like that. There are a couple times where the camera is just kind of lingering on nothing for a while.
Yeah.
But also, this had, you know, 1/1000th the budget of Birdman.
Sure. Yeah.
And it's also just way more kind of, you know, you watch it with a big stupid grin on your face. But yeah, because of that leak, they haven't been able to find a U.S. distributor. These movies like this don't sell at all in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a UK Blu-ray, and I'm just like, okay, Amazon.co.uk.
Yeah.
Anime-wise, what is the last thing I imported? It's been a minute.
It's been a little while for me.
Yeah.
I think the last thing I imported... I mean, like, Macross 7 doesn't count because I bought it from a book off while I was there. The last thing I actually think I bought imported was, like, Ava 3.33, which was, like, years ago. And when I'm thinking about it now, it's like, what would be the next thing you would consider doing that for? Ava 4.44, or right. Whatever the hell it is.
The last...
because yeah. It'll probably take forever. Although, I seriously doubt when that movie comes out, they will let it sit for long. Like, yeah. Somebody will come in and be like, okay, we're releasing this in theaters at the same time. I hope. This is what I desperately hope for, that I don't have to go there to watch it when it comes out.
You know what? Who the hell knows? There is nothing about those sequels that are going on any normal or common sense base
track.
I
think about it a lot.
The last Japanese import I did was those 4K Blu-rays of Ghost in the Shell.
Yeah, right. Mm. All right. Will Be Animating asks, love all your work and film TV recommendations, both of you. Well, thank you. Even in our current homogenous movie climate, is there a recent sci-fi horror or thriller film that you would recommend for someone tired of Disney, Pixar, Marvel, Lucasfilm year after year? I've already seen Alita and Us. Sci-fi, no, horror, or thriller. You just recommended theaters. One. You just recommended one.
Which one?
One Cut of the Dead.
Oh, yeah, One Cut of the Dead.
Genre,
yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Geez. Let's see. What have I seen that was like a thriller or a sci-fi or horror that was not like everything else?
The last thing that blew my mind like that was Annihilation. That was a while ago.
Annihilation. I wish Annihilation blew my mind, but it did not.
I love the hell out of that movie.
I like the last act of that movie a lot. The first 2/3, I could leave them. Hmm. Yeesh. That's a tough one. I haven't been branching out a lot lately. I've been sticking with pretty safe shit.
Yeah.
So... unfortunately, I don't think I have any recommendations for you. Us is really good, but you've already seen it. Yeah, sorry. I guess I ain't got nothing. I gotta watch some more strange shit. Johnny Demon KY asks, you already answered this, Cyborg 009, the most frustrating project you've ever worked on?
Yes.
Yeah. You don't even have to let me finish.
Nope.
Any chance Discotech will do more HD releases for anime that don't have any in Japan?
I mean...
it's hard to do that, right? It has to be the exact right circumstances.
It's, I mean, basically... it has to be a situation where the licensor has the HD master and no one's published it in Japan and they don't care.
Hmm.
And that happens sometimes, but not super often, because it basically has to be a show that wasn't a huge hit in Japan for them to care. Or it has to be a situation like Kimagure Orange Road, where it got released to Netflix, but there's no physical disc.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where it's just like, I'm looking down the schedule and I'm like, maybe... It's not really something that comes up.
Right.
You know,
it's not like a common situation.
It's also a matter of just like, if we get something, then we think, oh, is there a Japanese Blu-ray we can compare this to? And sometimes there is, and sometimes they're like, oh, there isn't one. Okay.
There's a Lum Blu-ray set. Is there one for Maison Ikkoku?
Yes.
When will we get those?
I don't know. I would love those, but, you know.
That's a big get.
All those giant Rumiko Takahashi titles are so hard.
Yeah, totally. Gravedigger Nulk asks, what three anime, doesn't have to be three, just if you can come up with one, it's okay. Fine. I'm changing the rules of your question. It's my show. I can do that. Just deal with it. What are three anime, series, OVAs, movies, doesn't matter, that you'd love to be able to work on a new release for? Cyborg 09.
Get out. I would love to be able to do the Megazone trilogy.
Maybe I'll get a chance.
I would love that. I don't know that anyone currently has it, but
Sentai doesn't have it anymore. Probably not.
I was going to say they released that when they were still ADV.
Yeah,
that's how long ago that was. I thought they were going to get the remasters, but
there's a big splashy remake coming. So
I wonder if it's even available then. Because a lot of times when there's a remake, they hold the original because they don't want to compete with it.
They hold the original because they don't want to compete with it, and they also want people to buy it because it's a tie-in product for the new thing. Is that out on Blu-ray in Japan?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So
it's out of print, though.
So they'll probably reissue it.
I don't think so.
And as a tie-in.
A lot of times when they do remakes like this, and I don't think this is one of them because it's not like there is no original work, but when a show is remade, like Fruits Basket or Full Metal Alchemist or something, oftentimes Japan doesn't want the old version circulated anymore.
Well, but we still get it. Like, we got sometimes. The 2003 Full Metal Alchemist at the same time as Brotherhood on Blu-ray. Like,
I think that was a happy accident.
I
think Funimation's
Megazone,
like,
I feel like you could totally, someone could do Megazone, it feels like.
Probably.
It doesn't mean they're going to stop you from putting it out. It just means they're not going to make
sometimes it. Does.
It.
Yeah. Sometimes it does. Sometimes it does. Like, I don't think anyone can get Heroic Legend of Arslan, the 90s version anymore.
Well, it's because they want you to watch the boring Hirasawa version?
Yes.
That one is so boring. I want that original really bad.
I do too.
There you go. See, we've got a whole list here. Megazone, yeah. Arslan.
Yeah, there's a bunch of old stuff that, you
Violence
know.
Violence Jack, you know.
I'm quite happy not doing Violence Jack.
Abashiri Family.
Bite Me Chameleon.
Yeah, there you go. Don't Leave Me Alone, Daisy. Zion, I wish you were here. All right, we can stop. Exotic Swami wants to know. Saw you were excited about the new Fruits Basket anime, Froob, as we call it around here. The Froob, if you want. That's Froob or Fru with an umlaut B. Those are the two proper spellings, by the way.
That, I don't think that's in the tweet.
No, it's not. I'm just.
Oh, that's you.
I'm adding this. It's Froob around here. That's what we call it. What are you hoping to experience from this new version that you didn't get from the old version? Like the whole story, I would imagine.
The whole story.
Which is totally different from what it is in the show.
Tonal consistency.
Yeah, which is what you get.
And I would personally love a resolution better than 320 by 240.
The Real Player file?
Yes.
That's higher resolution than Real Player, I think.
I think that's the highest it goes.
Yeah. Let's see. Branko Berkson asks, now that Netflix has announced a release date, will you do another special episode on Evangelion? Yes, we are actually planning some Evangelion stuff around, some podcast stuff around the release of the show. Also, should Netflix give End of Evangelion a theatrical release? You know my answer to that is yes.
And
in 4DX, on the moving seats, the theme park seats, with the ones that spray water in your face, in the first couple minutes, you can get one of those sequences.
No,
they
no.
mist in the air, too. You can create a rain effect with those seats. Perfect for End of Evangelion. Totally perfect. Let me program it. That's what I'm saying.
LCL.
Put some IC in there. Load those seats up. Oh, that would be such a mess. Everyone would be all sticky and disgusting at the end.
What is
covered
wrong with
in sugar
you?
Water.
God.
What do you mean, what's wrong with me? You've known me for a long time. let's see.
The fact that I know the answer to the question means that.
EA Home Phone wants to know, with Samsung shutting down production of Blu-ray players, now that's not accurate.
No, they're not.
It just means they're not making new types of Blu-ray players.
Everyone gets so excited when they think that something's about to die.
Yeah, but it's not. They're just not iterating on it anymore.
Frankly, what are you going to do to a Blu-ray player now? What are you going to do? That if you open up a Blu-ray player, literally it's the disc reading mechanism and a little Raspberry Pi size circuit board.
Yeah, and I don't want it to be smaller.
No,
because I really don't like the box, like the like little tiny box with a like four giant cables coming out of it. I don't like that because it slides around or whatever.
Yeah.
you know?
Well, you know, the innovation...
You got power, you got HDMI, you have optical out if you're doing audio. Like, and the box will, like, slide around because the wires are heavier than the boxes.
Now, here's the problem. I was actually thinking about this today because I saw that question come up on Twitter, and I was just like, you know, on the face of it, there's not a whole lot to innovate with a Blu-ray player. And I got that Sony 4K Blu-ray player upstairs. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's a brand new model. I paid through the nose to get it modded and everything. And the smart functionality of it is so atrocious.
Yeah.
It's like someone designed it who didn't know how an internet anything was supposed to work. Like, it is broken.
Yeah.
So... Really, what needs to be done right now is, like, look, everybody has optical discs lying around. Everyone who has them would be, like, able to, like, to be able to use them at some point. Some people, obviously, it's way more important than others. Mm. Why not just have one universal disc drive that's network-enabled that you can just have and can connect to any an iPad or a smartphone or a set-top box, and you just, it's like, the home disc player.
Mm-hmm.
Why does that not exist?
Mm-hmm.
And then I realized the answer to that. Everyone smart enough to actually do that is not a company that makes Blu-ray players.
Right. Yeah.
You know, it's just this weird little corner of home electronics that is just has been relegated to the B team.
Well, everyone's trying to do streaming now, so
right.
Everything's just going to focus on that.
Well, now that the disc technology, like, there's really nowhere more to go with disc technology.
Yeah.
Just build it into the TV.
Yeah.
The TVs already have can do everything else. It's like a little tiny thin thing that you can just, you know, slap onto the side as an optional extra.
Yeah. Yep. That would make a lot of sense. You think that would be pretty simple. But
you'd think.
It's not. Yeah, just put it in the TV. That just makes a lot of sense. Just slide the disc into the side. It should work fine.
Because, you know, it seems like the only people that can make set-top boxes that anyone wants are either Amazon or Apple.
Yeah. Although the Amazon box that I'm... I don't know. I mean, I've used both the Amazon Fire box and the Roku. The Roku's better.
Really?
I think so.
Because the Roku's pretty underpowered.
It is. But it's doesn't crash as often as the Fire box does. The Fire box crashes. If your Wi-Fi is anything less than really strong, it's going to really fuck up a lot. And it doesn't chunk down in quality easily. So if you're watching something in 4K and it needs to switch, it'll just dump out and you have to go back and like re-enter the program.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it sucks. I strengthened my Wi-Fi connection and now it's better, but on a sort of tremulous connection, it's not...
I have never been happier to be an Apple TV guy.
Yeah, I thought about getting one of those. They were on sale for like $130 this week or something like that.
Yeah, I would grab one. And, you know, honestly, that new Samsung I have.
No, like the thing is, like, I also just recently upgraded to a PS4 Pro.
Mm-hmm.
Between that and the Firebox.
Yeah, you're pretty much
golden. I don't need anything else.
What else do you need?
It's fine. Yeah, it's fine. I have too many things that have access to everything in my house as it is. So,
yeah.
Unless... It'd be nice to have one thing that does everything,
mm-hmm.
but that's never going to be the future so long as competition exists in this space.
But
so.
The streaming boxes already do everything.
It depends on how much stuff you actually do. Like,
I don't think there's any service that Apple can't get at this
point. I don't always want to turn on the PS4
sure.
to watch something because you control it with the actual controller and everything. It's a little shitty. It's not just like a remote.
Sure.
So I'll just turn the Amazon thing on and use that instead if I don't feel like turning on the PS4. That's fine. It's not ideal. It probably would be better if I had the Apple TV, but do I need to drop another $130 on something just because it's not super ideal?
Sure.
Nah, not really.
Right.
So, you know, the Amazon thing does 4K at least, so well, streaming 4K, which is kind of like shrug.
Right.
Whatever. Chideki asks, how far back is Discotech willing to go for a license rescue or a first-time license? So, I know interpret this two ways. I assume there's no age limit on what you're willing to pick up. If you think you could sell it, you'll get it.
I mean, I don't do licensing, but Discotech's released like the old 60s Toei features. It doesn't, anime literally doesn't go back much further than that.
I mean, you're not releasing fucking Momotaro or whatever the fuck it is.
But there's
the
one of
Funimation
those.
Funimation put out, yeah.
There's one of those. And, you know, honestly, you know, sometimes age is not the biggest impediment to getting something. It's what happened to the company that produced it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, every time Discotheque makes a big announcement, we just get barraged by people telling us, you know, just giving us their old anime wish lists.
Yeah, right.
And it's just like, okay, guys, we know what's out there. We know what people want and what people remember. You don't need to tell us. The problem isn't that we've forgotten. The problem is that a lot of that stuff just, like, nobody knows who owns the rights anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, there was this one that I remembered. It shall remain nameless. That I was like, hey, Selby, try to get this one. The publisher is this, and they were also the original producer. He goes there, and the company that made it has now turned itself into a company that makes industrial videos.
Mm-hmm.
We ask about the title and they're like, I think Bandai Visual has that. So we ask Bandai Visual and they're like, yeah, we don't know what you're talking about.
Hmm.
And so just nobody knows who has it. And that's just Great. It. What do you do now? So lots of dumb scenarios like that. There are scenarios where it's literally one company that produced it and they're still in business. And we go to them and we're like, hey, you have this. And they're like, we've never heard this show. And we're like, but it's literally copyright you guys.
Yeah.
Like, this is, you are the only producer for this. There's not even a production committee. And they're like, yeah, we don't know. Great. Thanks.
Cool. Oh, well, lost the time.
Yeah.
I guess.
It's a shame, but it happens.
Very rarely when that kind of thing starts happening, when people just start spitting out the stuff they want to get licensed, is it something that the people who they're saying it to have not already thought about. Like,
I mean,
very rarely. Like, sometimes you get, but the only time you're really caught off guard,
yeah,
is when someone says something so obscure or whatever that you just haven't thought about it in a long time, and then it's more like, I can't believe someone's bringing that up. Is this like a contest to see who can come up with the most obscure thing and ask us to put money into it? Like,
occasionally, like, this weird hive mind builds.
Yeah,
like where someone will throw out a title, you're like, really?
Yeah,
and then another person will be like, oh yeah, I really want that show. I miss that show, and I'm just like, huh.
Well, these two guys.
Yeah, and you know,
you maybe 1,000 friends, 2,000 friends.
Well, you know, I, honestly, with some of these shows that I'm just like, I couldn't believe it when Selby licensed Like the Clouds Like the Wind.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody remembered that movie.
There's a Ghibli connection.
Ish.
Kind of.
Yeah,
sorta.
I mean, I love that movie. I was really happy to work on it, but you know, I never expected to be able to work on it, and there it is.
There it is. Never say never.
Mm.
I'd imagine it's not necessarily like, hey, don't suggest things. It's just like the odds that you don't already know.
It's not a matter of don't suggest things. It's a matter of like, okay, hon.
Yeah. All right, sweetie. Yeah. Okay. UK license for Macross will be expiring in July this year. Is it likely that Harmony Gold will renew the license? I don't think they're going to get the chance.
No, I don't think there's any good blood left between them and the licensor. So,
no, so
once that expires, I think.
I bet they can't fucking wait to hand it to Sony or whatever.
I've, like.
Or Netflix or whoever it is.
I will do whatever I can, which is nothing, to get Macross. That would be amazing.
That would be incredible.
I'm not in charge of licensing. There's literally nothing
I would love
do.
Discotheque wax sets of the whole Macross saga. That would be great. Finally get Macross Plus.
Oh, God.
Get the original on Blu-ray. Get Do You Remember Love on Blu-ray. That'd
oh,
be great.
My God. I want that so bad. I want to make that so bad. Why is this not a thing?
My beloved Macross 7.
Okay, you're alone there.
No, I'm not.
I know you're
it's
not.
It's going through
I
a
know.
Renaissance now. People recognize and love Macross 7, finally. It was the butt of a joke for too long.
It was too stupid. I couldn't get into it.
All of Macross is just as stupid as Macross
7. It's all pretty. Plus isn't stupid. It's just cliche.
That's true. Plus isn't. Plus doesn't have this. It's still silly in parts.
It's really silly.
In parts.
But with that music, you have to take it seriously.
Totally. Oh, I love it all. It's just, when people talk about how quote-unquote dumb Macross 7 is, I'm like, look, it's just taking the premise to its logical conclusion, its logical end. This is what it looks like when it's butt rock instead of idle music, and it rules. Let's see. Murdoch TM asks, have there been masters in worse shape than Cyborg 009? Sounds like no.
Not that I've had to work with. I, honestly, if there were any worse than Cyborg, I think the only answer is give up.
Great advice. Your friend of mine, Evan Jones, asks, with dead media appreciation becoming more of a thing, can you offer a take on hunting down, purchasing, or fixing a Laserdisc player?
Stick with the Pioneer. models. The Pioneer ones are pretty solid and still have parts available.
Get some Tenchi Muyo laser discs to go with it.
Oh, yeah. And honestly, like, there are a handful of repair shops. I had to bring mine in for a repair about 2 years ago, and I was really happy that it was prepared to spend as much money on repair as you spend on the player itself.
How much do LaserDisc players cost?
Like, probably around $300 on eBay.
Really?
Now. Yeah, like, they
must be getting rare.
They're starting to get rare. The thing is with LaserDisc, I don't expect them to go the vinyl route at all.
No, of course not.
Because they look terrible.
Yeah, it's a box in the middle of your screen that's low resolution.
Right. Second of all, there's really not that many things that are on LaserDisc that aren't on a digital format.
Yeah.
Or look, and of those that are, you know,
with vinyl, you're occasionally getting a better experience.
Right.
With LaserDisc, you are never getting the best experience unless it's the only place to watch the thing.
Right. And, you know, if you just need the physical media fetish, Blu-ray is fine.
Well, the only thing that's nice about LaserDisc is you get the nice big album cover art.
Sure.
But a lot of those covers look like shit. So. Yeah.
Some of those are really bad looking.
Yeah.
Like, I have my Megazone 2 Part 2, or Megazone 2 or 3 Part 2. LaserDisc jacket, and it seriously looks like a Sears catalog from 1985. It just looks awful.
Some people are into that.
I know.
CC Takato asks, with Creamy Mommy getting an Asian Crush stream, is there a chance we'd see a DVD rescue for it and potentially other Anime Souls titles?
That would be nice, wouldn't it? I don't think that has anything to do with Discotech. I saw a couple people speculating because Asian Crush has a ton of Discotech stuff.
Yeah.
And that, like, makes up more than probably 80% of their anime that they have, but not all of it. I know that some companies in Japan, the licensors for the Anime Soul stuff, have started dusting it off again and resoliciting it. So it wouldn't surprise me if some of that stuff got a new lease on life in the near future.
Mm. We shall see.
Mm-hmm.
I could imagine you'd sell a few Brother Dear Brothers. Maybe.
I think that
a
got
handful.
I think that got a Blu-ray in Japan, actually.
Did it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And be a nice companion piece to Rose of Versailles, that's for sure.
Totally, yeah. TI Anime asks, do you have any insight on what happened with the Discotech license of Lupin the Third, the Fuma Conspiracy?
No insight, sorry. There's so much Lupin. I can barely keep it straight, and I don't ask questions if I don't have to.
This is in the toot-your-own-horn category. What do you think other anime license companies can learn from the way Discotech does things?
Well, from the sounds of it, how
here's
to make...
Here's a bear trap for you. Please step in it.
from the sounds of it, how to make an SDBD.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
There was a little bit of a fiasco with that.
I don't know what happened there. Mm-hmm. But, yes, aside from that, we're just, like, I think... The difference between what we do and what a lot of the other anime companies do, honestly, is just the amount of sweat we're willing to put into some of these discs and the fact that we are flexible enough that we can just keep pushing a disc and delaying a disc because we haven't announced it yet until it's actually ready to go out the door. There are discs that we've been working on for 2 years that nobody knows we have.
Mm-hmm.
And because we're trying to get something together for it, or we're trying to get the new materials for it. You know, it's not that we're holding out. It's that, you know, we want, you know, people are going to be spending money on this.
There's a reason Robot Carnival had all that shit on it.
Yeah.
There's a reason you're getting Cyborg 009 in the first place.
Okay. Yeah. I don't think any other company was dumb enough to do that one.
All right, last one from No Culottes. This is not related to Discotech. What do you think the future of Crunchyroll is, given recent moves by Warner Brothers, putting them under the same umbrella as Cartoon Network, Adult Swim, etc.? Lots of big changes coming to that company.
Both them and Funny. Nope.
Major staff changes at Crunchyroll recently,
too. Yeah.
Major staff changes.
My
friends who work there still work there largely, but they're all in different roles now.
Wow, what are they, Japanese or something? it's April.
Yeah, that, you know, being absorbed by Warner and AT&T has changed things there. I'm just an observer like you.
That whole Verve umbrella of companies, we have no idea what that's going to look like in 6 months.
A lot of people are speculating that the Crunchyroll brand will just get soaked into Verve and become part of Verve. But I don't see that happening. It's too valuable a brand. It seems to me. Now, I'm just
brand,
an observer, but it seems to me...
if anything,
the brand means something to anime fans, and they have like a million people or so.
If anything, Verve will go away, because Verve is just kind of a catch-all. It doesn't mean much by itself.
But it clearly, that's clearly the bigger project to the people who work there. Like the executives at Warner, it's obvious. Like, they were doing all that shit for a long time, where, like, with Dragon Ball Super, they're like, oh, Crunchyroll's down, watch it on Verve. Like, well, that's what they did for a really
long
time.
Here's what's interesting to me. So Warner Media now has this one group that has Boomerang, Crunchyroll, Verve, Adult Swim, Cartoon Network, and Rooster Teeth.
Mm-hmm.
That is one really strong pipeline for young adult focused content,
mm-hmm.
And youth oriented content, which means that they can use that pipeline. If they can coordinate it the right way, they can take one property and just bounce it around all of those, different pieces and, you know, that, and really make a huge thing out of it and really, you know, just wring every penny out of that property. Mm-hmm. That makes a huge lot of sense.
They're already attempting that. Yeah.
The question is, like, how will they align those puzzle pieces and what those puzzle pieces look like?
You know, it's interesting. This is anecdotal, obviously.
Sure.
So they just tried this with that Michael B. Jordan show they had. Rooster Teeth made basically an anime called Genlock.
Right.
That was, which of course was like, where's the Amiga?
We're old.
But they promoted it really heavily on on Crunchyroll, mm-hmm. and their team, they came for us. They were, in terms of press, they were all over us. And I reached out to my team of freelancers and was like, hey, does anyone want to review Genlock, this Rooster Teeth show? Not a single bite. Not a single bite. I could not get any interest from anyone. Mike Toole finally came to me and was like, hey, I just watched this. You want me to review it? I was like, yes, I need a review of that. I'm not sure how interested anime fans are in the Rooster Teeth stuff. I don't know how interested they really are, because, like, also the review didn't get that much. Like, it just didn't. It's like, do the anime fans care about this? Like,
no, they don't. Yeah. And anime fans don't.
Not yet, anyway.
Well, anime
fans, they care
fans,
about, like, Castlevania, which is original, but not this stuff.
Well, anime fans are very narrowly focused. They didn't bite on manhwa, the Korean manga. They didn't bite on, you know, most of the, almost any of the American-produced manga. They don't bite on most of the American co-productions.
I mean, now everything's an American co-production. I know what you mean. Dragon Age, Dawn of the Seeker, and Mass Effect, not Andromeda. What was that one called? Paragon Lost or something like that. I can't remember.
I can't
what it was
even
called.
Keep them track anymore. Cause they're all just chaff. They're driftwood.
Yeah.
So I don't think this pipeline is going to work quite like how Warner Media thinks it's going to work.
Mm-hmm.
That said, when they do happen on something that works and, you know, something that originates from Japan, which is really the litmus test for the giant nerds, us.
Yeah.
I think it could really propel something.
The thing they're propelling that's the thing. You're like, well, they didn't bite on this, this, or this. And I'm like, there's no shiny examples among any of these of, like, can't miss really exceptional anything.
Most of those are fairly not good.
And by all accounts, Genlock was not particularly exceptional. It just had a celebrity cast and wasn't incompetent. It wasn't bad or anything. It was just kind of like, okay, all right. It's a show like this. Okay.
Right.
It's fine. It's just in order for, like, there has to be something exceptional.
Or at least the creative has to be Japanese in origin.
Yeah.
That seems to be the litmus test, is the creative Japanese.
Yeah.
And
it does seem to matter a lot.
It does. And not purely for, you know, weeaboo reasons. It's like there is a notable difference in style.
Yep. Storytelling and all that stuff.
And so I don't know. The world of media is becoming so globalized that it's not altogether clear to me that the big studios understand that difference of who's speaking, of whose voice is being coming through in the final production. I would hope that they recognize that the value of anime is not just the look and feel, but the fact that it is a voice from another culture that we're hearing.
And a completely different set of socialization to begin with, but storytelling is just not the same. It's just not the same. It's structured differently.
Right.
So in most cases, it's blocked differently, it's written differently, the dialogue is different, the character types are different, the tropes are different, the stereotypes are different, the cliches are different.
Mm-hmm.
It's all different.
And there is value in that. I don't know where that fits in a globalized entertainment economy like we are pulling into very rapidly.
Yeah.
And I think there will be a seat for Japanese creatives at the table. I just don't know what the table's going to look like.
Yeah, it's like the American co-production is Genlock is still the Skittle in the bowl of M&Ms. And anime fans still are like, that's a fucking Skittle.
Right.
I like Skittles too, but not in this context.
And every
you can't put it in here with these M&Ms and tell me that it's an M&M, because it's not. It's a fucking Skittle.
The problem is Hollywood executives are so used to driving the ship.
Yeah.
That it's hard for me to wrap my head around them throwing a lot of money at a project and letting someone else drive it creatively.
Well, and it seems like that's definitely where Crunchyroll's executive hiring attitude is going, because they just replaced their head of conventions, the head of events,
mm-hmm.
with the lady who ran Star Wars Celebration and read stuff for Read Pop and stuff like that. Different, totally different vibe, mm-hmm. completely different. Crunchyroll felt legitimately like corporate, but also small and still felt like the anime industry. You know
right.
what I'm saying? You know
yeah.
that specific feel, even though Crunchyroll is a corporation owned by another giant corporation. Still had kind of an anime industry feel to it, as I know it, a 20-year veteran
sure.
of this whole stupid business.
Right.
But if you bring in the Star Wars Celebration lady and the Read Pop lady and tell them, okay, make this show, well, what's that mean? Is it going to be more like New York Comic Con or San Diego Comic Con, sort of personality lists and mostly just marketing?
I mean, one could argue that AX isn't too far from that
AX
now.
AX is very much like that, but yeah. AX is still run by the SPJA, so it still has a little bit of that, just a little bit. AX barely hanging on at AX. You can find it in the corners.
I mean, ultimately, the fans are going to be what drives it. I mean, I remember back, way, way back when,
mm-hmm.
I was working on Big Apple Anime Fest. We, were corporate sponsored up to our eyeballs.
Yeah.
And we had a whole room dedicated to Sony, who had almost no anime at the time. They were showing fucking Jackie Chan Adventures in that room.
Yeah.
And it was just, tumbleweeds in there. There was nobody gave a shit.
Yeah.
So the fans will go to what they like. And if the fans don't go to it, it will fall on its face. End of story.
Yeah, sure. I mean, from a success perspective, I'm not suggesting that it'll be unsuccessful or anything like that. It's just there is a marked difference between the people handling the marketing and PR for, say, something like San Diego Comic Con,
mm-hmm.
or even less than San Diego Comic Con, even more, it would be more so like Read Pop stuff.
Sure.
There's a difference between that and what you get from Crunchyroll Expo, or what you get even especially compared to Otakon.
Right. Right.
These people have been doing this long enough to be considered professionals, even though they're, in some cases, they're still volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
But the feeling is different. It is a corporatizing of something that used to feel a little bit more grassroots. Now, it's not a big deal or anything. It's just something I notice being here for so long. So
I'm not super excited
about these changes.
I can't think of Crunchyroll as anything but corporate. I just can't.
No. I'm certainly not suggesting that they are. It's just Crunchyroll. I'm talking about specifically that convention and the way it felt.
Okay.
The company itself is going through major changes right now.
Also, that convention has been around for, 3 years?
Two.
It's
only had two.
Yeah.
And the first year was great. It felt small, but yet important.
Mm-hmm.
Last year was the same. Small, yet important. Needed to be there. Had a lot of cool, exclusive stuff.
Clearly,
things we couldn't see.
Clearly, someone isn't happy with small.
Yeah, well, of course not.
Yeah.
Right? They're owned by fucking Warner Brothers and AT&T. They're not going to be happy with anything small. So it's got to get bigger. And that's fine. But I like it when it's small.
This is such a weird era. We don't have any idea what anything's going to look like in 6 months.
No, we don't. And that's fine.
Yeah. We're so near Disney, mm-hmm. where we're located in Glendale. And everyone's with bated breath waiting for the Warner Brother or waiting for the Fox Disney layoffs to happen.
That already happened, right? I thought they're going through them right now.
They're starting them, but they're thinking up to 10,000 people.
A buddy of mine already lost his job.
Lord. Yeah, they're just starting that shit, and those are all
bloodbath.
It's, I mean, and that's one company.
Yeah, no, it's one giant company.
Yeah, I mean, but you know, that this whole giant restructuring of the entire entertainment landscape worldwide that has sucked anime into it, I don't know where it's going, and nobody does. No, anyone who tells you they do is lying.
Yeah, the people inside those companies know the way it's going inside of their company.
Right.
But then they're just as curious what the fuck is going on inside any of these other companies.
Well, not only that, most of them, you know, most of these giant initiatives, I mean, Disney is basically throwing all their shit out to start, you know, competing with Netflix. They don't know how that's going to go. They're doing their damnedest to make sure it goes, but, you know, we have no idea if what they come up with is going to be viable long term.
It is. I don't think you can fight the Disney IP library with anything. I don't think you can fight that shit. You cannot fight all of that together.
Yeah.
Like, you just can't. Like, it, and I'm not saying, like, oh, the other streaming services will cower in their wake or whatever. It's just, I wouldn't bet against it being extremely successful. Like, I own all that shit on Blu-ray and 4K, and I'm still going to fucking subscribe to that thing because they'll probably have stuff that they haven't released yet in HD. Like,
That's very true.
You know,
Warner Brothers is much less of a sure bet.
Yeah.
We have, and, you know, Sony, we have no idea what the hell's their plan is.
Yeah, that's a mystery box.
Well, I've been hearing, you know, friends of mine in broader entertainment, they're just like, you know, we're pitching stuff with Sony Television. They don't have anywhere to put any of this stuff. They're pitching it, but none of the networks are biting because they don't own Sony.
Right. Everything's vertical integration now.
Right. So, you know, what is, where does Funimation land within that? Who the hell knows?
A license holding company for Dragon Ball, perhaps.
Oh, God.
Dragon Ball, My Hero Academia.
It's fucking scary.
Maybe One Piece. Yeah. Mm. Right, we'll see. It'll be an interesting couple of years. That's for dang sure. Probably an interesting year. I would say we have not seen even the start of the major changes that are probably going to happen this year.
Oh, yeah.
We'll see.
Certainly not.
Anyway, dude, it's good to have you on again.
This is, I feel great being back. This is so much fun.
We should have you on more often than once every year and a half or something like that.
If you insist.
All right. Thanks, man.
All right.
Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Justin for stopping by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a rating, a review, all those things. It really helps the show out. Thanks a lot, and we'll see you all next week.